the one and only Chris Lowe. You know him, senior writer, ESPN College Football. Chris, it's always an honor to meet with you and talk with you. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be with you guys. As we talked about earlier, it's nice to be talking at football and not everything that's going on off the field.
Well, hey, I know it's been a couple of weeks. We ran into you at SEC Media Days, and this has already died down. But I did want to ask you about Nick Saban, because, of course, you're the guy that broke the news that Nick Saban was retiring. And until Chris Lowe reports that Nick Saban's returning, I'm not believing anybody that puts that out there.
Yeah, well, I don't think Nick's going to talk to anybody but his wife about any of that kind of stuff. But not, you know, I don't have any reason to believe he's coming back to coach football based on talks with him, people around him. And I know everybody says, well, you never say never. And that's true. And Paul Feinbaum asked me, what if somebody comes and wants to pay him $20 million? Well, then I think any of us would listen, that kind of cash. But he's certainly not contemplating return. I don't think that's something that's on his mind. Most importantly, I know he's very happy with his life now. He and his wife, Terry, get to do things they never got to do before. He likes doing TV. He loves his role on TV. And moreover, he really is good at it. And I think that's something that he's sort of been able to sink his claws into. He prepares for those weekends just like he would an opponent as a coach. And Nick will be, I think, 74 this October, which means if, let's say, he did by some chance, he'd be close to 75. And I just don't think that's something in this juncture of his life he wants to go back down that path.
Yeah. Well, hopefully something we do see in our times, Chris, is the SEC go to a ninth game, where I know around media days you tweeted out, here's what you put out word for word. My sense in talking to several in and around the SEC is that the ninth league game will get pushed over the goal line. That was a couple weeks ago. Has anything changed? And what give you enough confidence to kind of put that out there?
Yeah, I do. And I think the number one reason is that the commissioner wants to go to nine, Greg Sankey. And he's been pretty outspoken about it, more so recently than even a year ago. But I think he's wanted to go to nine for a while. The coaches don't want to, unless there's some type of assurances that the playoff committee is going to reward the SEC for playing, you know, an SEC-type schedule. You know, if you're going to go to nine SEC games and play, you know, let's say Tennessee, let's use Tennessee's example, play Syracuse, or if you're LSU and you're going to play Clemson, then they want to be rewarded for that. I don't know if there's any set way to do that. Is there a metric, or is there some way you can come up with a different schedule strength that says, okay, if you go to nine from eight, then you're going to get more benefit of the doubt? I don't know. I just think at some point we're going to get to a position where every conference is playing the same number of games. And I think TV money will factor in. There'll be more money available for SEC schools to play that ninth game. And we all know that schools are looking for ways to generate more money with the rev share model.
Right. But, you know, here's one thing that I don't think is discussed when it comes to the coaches maybe not wanting to go to that ninth game. I understand it. But also, if you're the coaches, you know, I would be frustrated if I'm Coach Brent Venables and I'm looking at my schedule and then I'm looking at Eli Drinkwitz and his schedule. Or if I'm Billy Napier, I'm pretty frustrated with my schedule, whereas Josh Heupel, maybe, you know, I like that schedule. So, I mean, doesn't it kind of cut both ways to where if we stay at eight, we're kind of forced to have these unbalanced league schedules?
Yeah, here's my thing on the schedule, and you're right. There's imbalance within conferences when it comes to the schedule. And that's the thing that I don't think people talk enough about that. So you're right. Go ask the OU folks what they think of Texas' schedule. The first 2 years versus OU schedule. And you look around the league, Missouri plays six straight games at home this year, 8-12 at home. They have, in my mind, the most manageable schedule in the league. And then you look at Oklahoma's schedule, look at Florida's schedule. And people say, well, how did it get this way? Well, they had to sort of make up or create schedules for OU and Texas because they came in a year earlier than expected, remember. and then they're going to try to go to more permanent schedules going forward. But if you stay at eight, then yeah, I think it's just going to be more of these types of imbalanced schedules within the league. Here's the other thing: if you stay at eight, at some point, then you're going to start losing some rivalries. I don't mean you're going to lose Auburn, Alabama, but would you lose Alabama, Tennessee? Could you lose other type rivals like that? Could you lose Georgia, Auburn? If you stay at eight, so those are some questions I think people ask themselves when they start going to 8 versus 9. Because if you go to 9 games, there's more opportunity to play those games, clearly. And I don't think any of us that sort of cut our teeth to grow up with the SEC want to see those rivalries go away, because that's the fabric of not only the SEC, but college football, those teams playing every year. On a lesser scale, you know, Mississippi State and Alabama didn't play last year. They played 74 straight years. 74 straight years. They're about, I don't know, 55 miles away from each other. There's just something to me inherently wrong about that when you take away those types of games that have been played for such a long time.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm 100% with you. But, man, yeah, we could kind of debate this to no end, but I really wanted to get your thoughts on week one upcoming. I know you just did a piece of superlatives of the schedules and in college football for ESPN here recently. I'm just kind of curious which week one game that involves an SEC team are you most excited about this upcoming college football season?
Well, yeah, the one I'm going to is LSU-Clemson, and I'm really looking forward to that one. Two top 10 teams, two teams that have a lot of big hopes, big expectations for this year. And you know, LSU has been really bad in these openers. For Brian Kelly, this is one they need to win. And I think this is Dabo's best team since that 15-19 run. And holding serve at home against LSU will be big for them if they're going to get back to being a championship-caliber team. Clearly, Ohio State, Texas is one everybody's going to talk about. That's going to be a great game. I look forward to watching it. You know, the one I think is most underrated, though, is Auburn and Baylor. I can't think of a team in the league, in the SEC, that's playing a more important opener as far as how their season might turn out, how it will be shaped than this one. Because they go on the road, remember, they play Baylor. If they can't win that game, it's going to get ugly on the Plains. It really will. That will be the kind of open to the season. You know, in talking to Hugh this offseason, he felt like, listen, you know, yeah, it's been disappointing the last 2 years, but we're headed in the right direction. If they go on the road and lose to Baylor, it's going to be hard to convince your fan base that you're headed in the right direction. And I think the same goes for Baylor and Aranda. This is a big game at home to have a chance to beat an SEC team. So I think of all those games involving SEC teams right outside the gate, that Baylor-Auburn game. And the other one is Oklahoma and Michigan. You know, same for Brent Venables. He needs some momentum as they go into what's a really difficult schedule for the Sooners. And that fan base needs something to hold on to. Hey, all right, here's what we've been waiting on. We spent a lot of money in the offseason. We brought in portal transfers at key positions. Let's see that translate on the field. So I think that Michigan game in Norman is one that the Sooners desperately need to win.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you hit on Texas there briefly with Ohio State, but there's just so much hoopla and everything, whatever adjective you want to use with Arch Manning, and I guess I'm just about to add to it. What's your confidence level or belief that Arch Manning could be the best Manning yet? And maybe I'm just talking just college football, obviously Peyton's an all-time legend, Eli too in the NFL. But what is there a chance that Arch could be the best Manning in college football?
I'm not ready to go down that path. not with his two uncles, both being Hall of Famers. So now ask me that in 2 years from now, or maybe three. Even as a granddad, Archie says, "Wait a minute now, let's slow this train down." You know, he hasn't done much of anything yet in college football. He certainly has the intangibles. He's got the bloodlines. He's a big, athletic kid who can throw it. I'd say the best athlete of all of them, when you look at Peyton and you look at Eli's dad, certainly was one of those guys who can run around, different era of football, grant you, but can run around and make plays. I do think Arch is probably more of a guy when the play breaks down and not just being a purely pocket passer who could be more effective. But teams are going to be ready. And it's not like he's going to walk out there and people are going to be a little bit blindsided about what he is or what he can do. I think the flip side of that is, at least for him, this is his third year on campus. And it's not like he's just walking. People talk about the Peyton comparison. Peyton walked on as a gangly 18-year-old campus in 1994. He hadn't been on campus for 2 years. He hadn't played. You know, and they throw him into that UCLA game when Jerry Colquitt gets hurt, Todd Helton. And he'll tell you, you know, he wasn't close to being ready physically, mentally, emotionally. You know, he ended up playing the rest of that year, most of the rest of that year. But at least Artsy has 2 years under his belt. He played on some big stages last year. Granted, it was situationally. So I don't think this is the same as when Peyton came in as a true freshman, because Art should be a lot more ahead. He should be a lot more ahead of where Peyton was at this point in his career.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Peyton, last team I wanted to ask you about, Chris, was Tennessee. And, you know, it's been a rocky offseason, I think, to put it kindly, with obviously the Nico stuff now coming into this year. Or at least the camp, the Boo Carter situation, and not to say that they're necessarily related, but any concern or you know, should there be concern for Tennessee fans of just where is this Josh Heupel program? In you know, it just seems like if it's not one thing, it's another. Or are you not concerned at all about that?
To me, it's harder than ever to manage a football team in this era with NIL payments and guys making a lot of money and guys threatening to get in the portal. And I do think the Boo and Nico situations are to some degree similar. You know, Nico missed some offseason workouts, Boo missed some offseason workouts. The seniors, the leaders on this team were very clear. Hey, we're not going to put up with that BS this year. We're going to hold everybody accountable. That's what they did with Boo. And he left. He was gone for 2 weeks. Comes back. Josh gives him a chance to earn his way back. And I think a lot of what we see from Boo Carter, does he play the first game? Does he miss some time? That type of thing is going to depend on how sincere he is about doing everything he's got to do to get back within the good graces of the players. Because you can't fool the players. You know, coaches are all, for the most part, if they think a guy can help them win a game, you're always going to give him a little bit more rope if a guy's a special talent, and clearly Boo Carter is. But the players haven't gone through some of this with Nico last year. I don't think Boo was 100% last year when it came to being at meetings and being on time in meetings. He was gone, as I said, for 2 weeks this offseason. So, yeah, he's got to toe the line and prove that he wants to be a part of this football team. So far, sounds like so good. We'll find out if that continues. Here's what I think about Tennessee. I think Tennessee is at the point in its program under Josh where this may be the hardest step. Because to his credit, they've made steps every year. They've beaten Alabama. They've beaten Florida multiple times. They get to the playoff last year. They've been outstanding at home in Neyland Stadium. But now, what's the next step? Well, the next step is getting to the playoff and making a deep run, you know, or playing for an SEC championship or winning an SEC championship. And oftentimes, that's the steepest step. And I don't know. When you look at the quarterback situation, it's still a little bit uncertain. Some of the key guys they lost on defense. And then are they good? And people talk about whether it's Aguilar or Matt Leonard. Are they good enough around the quarterback, whoever it is? You know, can they protect? The receivers catch the football? Do they get open? Those are things that I think are still TBD. I do think Tim Pank's defense will be really good again. Good enough that Tennessee's going to be in and have a chance to win just about every game they play, which was the case last year. They leaned hard on the defense. I don't know if they can lean quite that hard this year and expect to get back in the playoff. They're going to have to make more plays on offense.
Mm-hmm. And then one quick follow-up on Boo Carter. I know he's you know, working his way back and not quite a full participant, but you know, the offseason discussion was he's going to play both sides of the ball. I don't know how much he was actually going to be used on offense, but now that he's having to go this route, I mean, doesn't that ultimately hurt him? Tennessee could desperately need a receiver to emerge. Is the plan, you think, still to use him on offense, or has this situation kind of hurt those chances?
Well, I'd say this, it hadn't helped. If you're going to play both ways in today's era of college football, you better be there for every workout, every practice. You better get as much time as you can in with the quarterbacks throwing. Because remember, if it is Aguilar, he's already new. So you've got to sort of form and develop that chemistry with the receivers. So it doesn't help. I don't think it's a deal breaker, but so much of this is in Boo's corner. I mean, what he wants, what he does, how he does it, how diligent he is at working extra, being there early, staying late, all the things you got to do. People see it on the field. They see what Travis Hunter did last year. Listen, it takes a special player, a special, special player to be a legitimate factor on both sides of the football and not just be sort of a gadget type guy, gimmick type thing. And clearly, Boo's got the talent and he's got the skill set to be a difference maker at receiver, but you can't just step out there and do it. You've got to work at it and you got to put in the time. And I think that's still a little bit TBD to see how much they can use him on offense this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chris, I can't thank you enough for the time. You really are an invaluable follow for anybody on social media, always on top of everything, breaking all the stories. So just want to say continue to the great work and best of luck this season.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's good to be with you. I'm ready, like everybody else, for the games to actually start.